Hello and welcome to the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. I would like to thank the following supporters for their continuous support. Elizabeth Villamagna, Laura Solarin, Julia Schroeder, Tanya Weber, Alicia Murphy, Jennifer Jones, Leah Chiappino, Marissa Baker, JJ Hurley, Robin Lee, Zoe Rodriguez, Matilda Smith-Thompson, Shannon Van Scoten, Rebecca Harris, Dana Wilkins, Chantel Dubois-Nishiyama, Peyton England, Laura Furman, Megan Parker, Melissa Halfpint Gilbert, Teresa Trapp, Valerie Williams, The No Agenda Podcast, Sherry Benner, Whitney Griggs, Julia Jin, Chris Cooling from the Forgotten.tv podcast, Don Roberts, Max Duration, Aaron Wortman, Liz Serha, Brian S., Bobby Young, Lydia Kikuchi, Stacey Corrigan, Avira Dabas, Candy Gleason, Angie Zadava, Gerald Lang from the OSI Files podcast, Megan Eichner, Kitty Bollinger, Jeannie Mitchell, Jeff Griffin, Dean Almanzo Butler, Julia Monin, Whitney Cole, Rebecca Frederick, Angela Bowen from the Looking Back on My Wonder Years, a Wonder Years podcast, Annie Quinn, Jill Stillman, Michelle Plug, Dottie Cashin, Suzanne Holland, Spunky Cheek, Leah Mitchell from the Retro TV podcast, Chris Hassler from the VHS Rewind podcast, Stacey Keller, Matt Mercier, Cheyenne Hampton, Stephanie Carnes, Kelly Milkey from the Dr. Quincast podcast, Alicia Olin, Rachel Barron, and Jeannie Comer. Thank you all for your support. You make this podcast possible, and in my eyes, this is truly your podcast. So if you have any ideas, suggestions, please feel free to reach out. If you would like to support Walnut Grovecast, please visit patreon.com/walnutgrovecast. Without further delay, please enjoy the newest episode of Walnut Grovecast. Special guest grew up on a farm, and she comes from a family of 15. She's had a very impressive singing career, which began in her church and later in school choirs. After being awarded a scholarship to study music at San Francisco State College in the 1950s, she would choose a stage name that would carry on throughout her entire career, and that name is Ketty Lester. And her name and presence would eventually lead to touring Europe and South America while working alongside Cab Calloway and his part of his orchestra. That really is just the beginning of a really interesting career that has led to the release of her newest book, Ketty Lester, From Arkansas to Grammy-nominated Love Letters to Little House on the Prairie. Please welcome to the show, Ketty Lester. How are you doing, Ketty?
Hello, how are you?
I'm doing all right. I couldn't catch my breath on that one. I was like, whew. thank you so much for taking the time to do this. And I've been looking forward to speaking with you for a really long time. And believe it or not, Little House on the Prairie is a show that so many people listen and watch. And they thankfully listen to my show as well. And everybody's still in love with the show. And your character, Hester Sue, has brought so much to the universe of Little House on the Prairie, but there's so much more to you, and that's kind of what I wanted to touch upon as well.
Oh.
So,
okay,
could you talk? Can you talk a little bit about how you ended up in the Hester Sue Terhune role?
Well, actually, I did the Roy Campanella story. Roy Campanella, as you may not know, he was one of our first baseball players. Mm-hmm. Not first, but he was the back catcher
okay.
for one of the baseball teams. But he had an accident and he passed away, and they made a film of his story, his life story. And Michael Landon was the director. And that's how I met Michael. And we seemed to just get along very well. I have an illness, and of course, he took care of me. I had a problem on the show, and he took care of me. And then he asked me if I wanted to come on Little House on the Prairie. I said, you know my condition now. And he said, I didn't ask you that. I asked you, do you want to be on Little House on the Prairie? I said, oh. And I was there. And wow. That's how I got it.
That's great. I mean, you know, of course he saw talent, right? I mean, that was maybe one of his gifts. And
yes.
I do want to mention that Roy. Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
Michael was a very talented man. On Little House, he did some of the writing. He did the writing, the directing, and of course, he played the lead part.
I do want to mention about Roy Campanella. He was on the Brooklyn Dodgers, and he was he played on the Negro Leagues at the time, and they actually practice right where my high school was in Cedarhurst, New York. Yeah, there was a stadium there before it was a high school, and it was one of the. It's so close to Manhattan that. The Brooklyn Dodgers would practice there. And we're talking way back. I mean, we're talking a very long time ago.
Yes, well, I'm an old woman.
I'm catching up. But so that's a great story. I mean, so you met him on the set and he's like, well, you're perfect for this, for Little House on the Prairie. And so were you a fan of Little House on the Prairie, the TV show, beforehand?
I hate to say it, but I was the first black woman to do television. Now, black people back in those days, films, mm-hmm. but they didn't do TV.
Right, there wasn't much of a crossover.
Television, the first show I did in television was a soap opera, Days of Our Lives, when it first came out.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I met a lady named Dorothy Shea, which was a hillbilly singer, and she knew the lady, Mrs. Corday, was the woman that started that show. And I think her son, Steel, directs that and produces that show. It's still on the air.
Right.
But I was there before he came on. I was there when his mother was the producer. She was the one that started it.
Wow. So you go all the way back to really the beginning of this. And really, I mean, you're setting up a lot of spots for African-American women and men to enter the world of television. Because like you're saying, at the time, it just wasn't the easiest thing in the world for an African-American.
Well, we wasn't on television at that time. I was the first one on there. But I had been with I started in San Francisco, but I had to move to Los Angeles. And I met the Marx Brothers.
Oh, wow. I'm a huge fan of the Marx Brothers.
Well, I was the one that opened the Ye Little, not the Ye Little, I opened the Ye Little Club, yes. But I also was the one that the show in New York, in San Francisco, was The Purple Onion. Have you ever?
I have heard of The Purple Onion, and I have heard of The Purple Onion. It was a club, right?
All right. I played The Purple Onion.
Oh.
It was myself. It was Maya Angelou. And it was Stella Stiller.
Wow.
We were the cast at The Purple Onion. And I was there with Maya and Phyllis for about a year. And then they decided to move and open a new Purple Onion in Los Angeles. And when I came to Los Angeles to open the Purple Onion here, that's where I met the Marx Brothers, Groucho Marx.
And what was that like? I mean, now you're working with this comedy team. That must have been crazy.
Silly and so was I. But I was young, coming from the country, didn't know much about anything. And he just came in the club and asked me. He came in about three times before he asked me if I wanted to come on television. So I didn't know much about television at that time. But I would always say, I don't care. Didn't make me no difference. If I was singing, I could sing, and I would do it, you know. So I met Groucho Marx at the New Purple Onion.
So when you went on television, did you realize how important it was, not only at the time, but even now when you reflect back, I'm sure you realize how important it was for you to take that step and how really courageous. But at the time, what were your thoughts?
Did I think it was important? No.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's your career, but.
No, it was with me. It was just a matter of he wanted me to sing on his show. Mm. So at that time, I was about 20. And so I would always say, if you want me to sing, I can sing.
Yeah.
You know, and I would do it. And I said, I don't care. You want me to come on there?
You're like, fine, whatever.
But whatever. I think whatever was there.
Wow.
At that time.
So, I mean, so at this point, I mean, you have a career with the Marx Brothers. You you worked with the Cab Calloway Orchestra, which is just, you know, with Phyllis Diller. You know, you are becoming a legend, and you're surrounded by other legends, and you end up on a show like Little House on the Prairie. Was the TV show Little House on the Prairie even on your radar? Did you even watch it? Did you even have time for TV?
I didn't even know about it at that time. Because now, when I came to Los Angeles, Blacks wasn't on television, and I didn't know nothing about television.
Mm-hmm.
So it was just something that Groucho said, do you want to sing on my show? I said, I don't care. And that was that. So I was the first Black to go on television as a singer.
It's amazing. And it's a real, I just think it's a wonderful story. And just as such a fan of Groucho Marx and a fan of your music career and all of these people you're talking about, that's an incredible story.
And all of that happened so much later, you know.
Yeah.
Groucho was the first. And then the second one was me going to the Ye Little Club.
Mm-hmm.
That was a club in Beverly Hills. And after about a year, I kept the Purple Onion open for about 2 years. And then they said they had to close it down. So we closed it down, and I did other things, singing. And then they opened this Ye Little Club in Beverly Hills, and they asked me to come and sing there. So that was like my basic home base, as you call it.
Right. And
that's where I met all of these white singers, Rosemary Clooney, Dorothy Shay, and a lot of those people. And Dorothy Shay was the one that got me on the soap opera, Days of Our Lives. Have you ever heard of Days of Our Lives?
Of course. And, you know, that's a legendary show.
It's an old show. It started way back in the... I was there in the late 50s.
And how long were you on Days of Our Lives?
I was on there for about 6 or 8 months.
And that's a lot of work, right? I mean, it's a daily soap opera.
Yes, it's a soap opera. What you did, you went there. And but I had a good memory back in those days. I could read something, and I just about knew what my part was. So all I had to do is find out who said the first line, and I would go on with mine.
But you were a kid. You're going from being a musician, a singer, and you're doing well. And then you jump into television like this. It must have been really, really exciting.
It was exciting, yes. Mm. But it was something I didn't know. It was new to me.
It was new to everyone.
And so it was something that was new. It was exciting to me. I was not a maid, as most times back in those days. You had to be very light to play in the movies. You had to be light, or you had to be a maid or fat like Aunt Jemima.
Yeah.
So it was back in the days when Martin Luther King was fighting for that. No, this was before that.
Yeah, this is before.
This was way before that. For some reason, Dorothy Shay got me on that soap opera.
That's incredible. I love that. And your relationships with Dorothy Shay and with Rosemary Clooney, would those be relationships that would continue? Would you remain friends with them?
I would remain, but Dorothy Shay, I became her protege.
Oh, wow.
So... now, this is a white woman, a Western singer, country Western singer, that took me on as a prodigy.
Very different music, too. I mean, you're a jazz singer. I would categorize
your
music.
But I didn't stop singing my jazz.
Yeah.
You know, I still sing jazz. But she just liked me as a singer. It was at the Ye Little Club, and that's where all of the white singers would go after their show.
Wow.
And I was like, I would sing to them.
Now, when you released the single Love Letters, which is it's a tremendous song. It's a great song, but it's also a tremendous success for you. And it was nominated for a Grammy. What was your reaction? Did you freak out?
You know, I did that song, but I didn't even know the song Like I said, I didn't know nothing back in those days. Mm. People, the white people would come in the club and I would meet them. And they would ask me, Select Dorothy said, we're going to change your name. Well, I said, why? Because Frierson is too long for show business. And that's my real name. I'm a Frierson.
But it's not Ketty Frierson, is it?
No, it's Revoida Frierson. I'm from the country.
Yeah.
And I've had three names in my lifetime. My mother named me Ojiapa, which is a real odd name. It's like Obama. Mm-hmm. But she named me Ojiapa. We had a teacher that would always come to see my mother after she had, and what did you name her? And she said, Ojiapa. You can't name that child that. And she said, well, that's her name. Well, you're going to have to change it. She says, well, then if you want it changed, you're going to have to do it because I'm not. Would you believe the teacher with the hope and changed my name?
What?
And all they did was put a line through Ojiapa, and she did ask the girl asked her, how did you spell this with Voida?
Boy, that was a different time.
That was when I was in the country.
Wow. And you come from a family.
And when I went to San Francisco and started going to school there at college, mm-hmm. That's when I changed my name to Ketty.
And what do you think of that? Do you like the name Ketty?
Yes.
Still?
I didn't really like it, but I got tired of people. Revoida is a hard name.
Yeah.
All my life, I've had, what is your name? I said, Revoida. And they'd say, what? That's the very next line. So when I went to San Francisco, I said, the first person that said, what? On my name, I'm going to change it. And that's what I did.
Well, I think Ketty is such a unique name.
I thought I was naming myself Cat. C-A-T, but I forgot how to spell it. And I said K-E-T-T-Y.
So it was going to be Kitty Lester?
Yes, Kitty Lester.
I'm going to call you Kitty from now on. I think they could both work. I think Kitty or Ketty Lester is...
Yes,
you know what?
Ketty, I named myself Ketty, and it was Ketty Frierson for a long time. And then when I came to Los Angeles, that's when Dorothy Shay said, Frierson is too long for a professional name.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I didn't know what mattered with professional. I just thought, the only reason I named myself Ketty is to get myself out of Revoida.
Out of what? I'm sorry.
Revoida.
Oh, okay.
That name that teacher gave me.
Yeah.
And it was so hard because every time you say Revoida, they're going to say, what?
You know.
And you're going to have to spell it and then pronounce it.
I'm so jealous of people who have names like that. Like it's Mark. You know, it's Mark. Mark. There's nothing short. There's nothing long for it. So.
Right.
So when I see, like, you know, you have all of these great exotic names, and I think it's great. I would love for people to go, what is your name? That's Mark.
Well, it is hard to live with.
No. But Keddy, I think Keddy ends up being a great name. I think it suits you also. But
it suits me.
But when
Dorothy named me Lester.
Mm.
She said, we will call you Keddy Lester. I said, well, I don't care.
Just, as long as it's up in light.
Yeah.
It's like, as long as I'm, you know, as long as I have Elvis opening up for me, you know.
Yeah. It'll be all right. I can remember that. I can say that quick.
Yeah.
So that's who named me that. And that's how I got it.
No.
And Dorothy and Mrs. Corday wrote this version of Days of Our Lives for me to come on as a black family. I was Mrs. Grant.
So you're the were you the first black family to be on television at all?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, but nobody knows that.
Yeah, I was about to say, I'm like, how come I've never heard this?
That was in the 50s.
Well, I'll do everything I can to let people know, but I think that's an incredible fact. And the fact that, you know, you have so many fond memories from that period of time is also really wonderful.
Right.
But now, so you're doing television. When Days of Our Lives came to an end, did you want to continue television? Or did you want to go to music? Were you just like...
By that time, I had been to New York.
Yep.
I had been to Europe. I had been to Italy. And I had started doing the acting. I was the one, when Martin Luther King started fighting for the average black woman, he started that, and I started doing more acting on television. I did also the first you remember, you wouldn't remember that, but it was a show called Julia. And it was the first black thing. I did it with Diane Carroll. It was me and Diane Carroll, and that was our first little show together.
Wow. You know, I looked it up really quickly, and I'm not familiar. I'm not going to lie. I'm not familiar with this sitcom. I do know that you were on The Bill Cosby Show in the late 60s.
Well, you see, this Julia was the first black sitcom to come on TV.
Hmm.
Julia was the first.
So it was about a black family. You have, the dynamic of the mom and son.
No, it wasn't. That was Days of Our Lives. I had already been on television.
Right.
But when they started having the sitcoms, Julia was the first black sitcom to come on TV, and it was Diane Carroll. Diane Carroll, she was a nurse, and me.
Hmm. And how did you feel about that? I mean, I know...
I didn't care nothing about it. I didn't think about it, because I didn't know... You see, when you're from the South, you know your place, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I have come from Arkansas. Arkansas is one of the most prejudiced towns, countries, states in the it's just like Alabama. It's just like Mississippi.
So you're coming from a real, you know, a very different place than
I'm
LA.
I'm coming from a different country.
Yeah, literally, right?
Country.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I go to a big city. When I finished school in 54. All right. When I left, I didn't take no, you didn't ride the planes, you didn't ride the buses. My brother had to come and get me and my sister Maddie that I'm going to see after I finish talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
We finished school together. And we were the two that went to San Francisco, and we went to the City College.
And this is your sister. Right. You're still friendly. You're still close with. You're going to visit her this afternoon.
She died last year.
Mm-hmm. Sorry.
She passed away. Now, my sister that I'm with now, the only two of the 15 of us that's still alive is my sister Ernestine, which is in the rest home,
mm-hmm.
and me. All the others are dead.
Did Ernestine ever want to change her name?
No.
It's not a bad name. I like Ernestine. Right? It's a nice name.
No, but see, I'm the 15th. I'm the last one.
Oh, my, you're the youngest.
I'm out of names.
You're the baby. Come on.
I'm the baby. Yes.
Wow. So, but growing up, 15 siblings, you make it your way, and you end up on this sitcom, Julia. I mean, you're coming from one universe, literally, practically,
to
Hollywood and L.A. and all of this. And you're meeting all of these stars, really. And, I mean, what? I mean, it must have been just an incredible time.
It was new to me.
Yeah.
But all I knew is to treat him with respect and do my thing,
mm-hmm.
go my way, and let them do theirs. And when they would ask me questions, I would simply answer those questions. And if they asked me to sing, you know, I'm going to say, I don't care. All right. And that's it.
So could I ask you...
That's my life.
If I could ask you about the song Love Letters and when you were Grammy nominated, did that change a lot of things when you found out that you were nominated for a Grammy Award?
Now that's going to be the shock. I didn't know I was nominated.
You were like,
nobody
for a what?
Nobody told me anything about Love Letters being nominated for no Grammy. I didn't know that until I met the girl that you met, Linda.
Oh.
And she said, and you were nominated. I said, no, I wasn't. I said, and don't believe everything you hear or you read. And she says, no, Teddy, you were nominated for a Grammy. We're back in 62. I says, no, I wasn't.
You're arguing.
Yes, I argued with her, and I told her I was not nominated for no Grammy. And she says, I'm going to get it, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm not lying. I said, well, you're going to have to prove it. I said, because...
But she did. She proved it.
About that. She sent to the Grammys.
Wow.
And got a letter that I was nominated, and Love Letters was nominated.
Wow.
As the best singer of that year.
Of 62, I think, right?
62, yes. Well, that's when I found that out. Well, that was after I'm retired.
It's like, oh, that's nice.
I just said, well, isn't that amazing? I said, why didn't anybody tell me?
It would have been nice if you had email back then.
Yes, but you know, I had just, a doctor had left, me and started her. She was working on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't have a protege. I didn't have a manager. She put me with an agent called GAC.
Wow.
And they didn't know nothing. They just know that I had a number two hit. And they would just book me, and I would just go wherever they sent me. But as far as me knowing about Grammys, I didn't know nothing about awards.
Mm-hmm.
You see, I didn't know that people got awards for singing.
Wow. Could I ask you a little bit about your new book?
New book?
Yeah.
It's very... I've had an interesting life, you know, by coming... I say, like, the first chapter is about me being raised on the farm. And that was my happiest time in my life because I was the baby. I was, we stayed right in the big house. But we have property down there.
On a farm, right? You grew up on a farm.
We had a farm. I was born on a farm. And we lived in, there was three brothers and a sister that my grandfather had. And they had, we lived in one house. My Uncle Zeke lived in another house. And my Uncle Calvin lived in another, and their sister lived in a different place.
Wow. So your whole family, it's a big family right there.
It's 15 of us in just my family.
All the cousins, bring them in, it's a real party.
Yes, and you bring all those cousins in, you got a real thing going.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine Christmas morning.
Those were happy days, and if you read the book, you'll find out my brothers made that the day for us young girls.
Hmm.
There was no Santa Claus, you know.
Yeah.
Like they have Santa Claus with the red suits on now, and people, the children go, and we didn't have none of that. My brothers was our Santa Claus, but we didn't know it. But whatever they said was gospel as far as we were concerned. And they made us go to bed because Santa Claus don't like hard-headed little girls. And he don't like to be talked to.
Hard-headed little girls.
Yes. That was my two brothers, and those two brothers was two of the first blacks to go in World War II.
Wow. Again, a first. I mean, it's a terrible thing. I mean, to go to war, of course, but the fact that they went, you know, they fought for their country.
Thing of it is, they would not. When they first started the army, they wouldn't take blacks.
Yeah.
They wouldn't let blacks go in. But you could volunteer And my two brothers, volunteers, was two of the first blacks to volunteer.
So they were the two of the first Americans to, African Americans, to
volunteer.
To go and help win the war.
In the service.
Wow.
Now, they didn't, I don't know, they just did the cooking and the cleaning and stuff like that. Now, when World War II really started was during Pearl Harbor.
Yes.
Now, when Pearl Harbor came, that's when the war started. And when they finally decided that they were going to help the Europeans with the war, and the Americans joined, and they started sending the American soldiers over there. They would volunteer the blacks to come in. So, like my father, and there was a troop of soldiers that loaded the ammunition in San Francisco at the big shipyard there.
Right.
They would do that kind of stuff. But when it got so bad, you know, that was when Roosevelt was president.
Yeah.
Eleanor Roosevelt was actually the president, but, you know.
Yeah, that's the word. Yeah.
Eleanor Roosevelt trained the black soldiers to be pilots. She brought a, had them. She said, "Why aren't those black soldiers flying planes?"
Right.
And we had a school. It was Tuskegee Institute in Alabama.
Yes, very historical.
Very historical. That's George Washington Carver. Did that, and he did with the peanut, you know, did all this stuff with the peanut.
Yes.
But that was a famous school, and she had one of the trainers, a white trainer, to come down there. And I think it was about, I don't know how many of them it was, but she had him train those black soldiers to be flyers. Now, they wasn't bombers, so to speak. They were guards for the other soldiers. The other soldiers would go up, and they'd be, if they got out of loss or something, the black soldiers would they would shoot that German plane down. And they were great flyers. They'd go under that plane and tell the white soldier, "Follow me," and they'd take them back to the camps.
And it would help us win the war because
It helped us win the war. That's how we won the war.
And the Tuskegee Airmen are known as some of the best.
The Airmen are very famous. They were some of the best flyers in the war.
Right. It's crazy when you really think.
But they got no awards for nothing.
But, you know, it's crazy to think, you know, that because of the color of this person's skin, that they can't do these things. And when you create the opportunity for them to learn it, it's they're excelling at it. And although it's war, you know, war, of course, is always a terrible thing. But it shows you maybe under pressure, it forced people to open their eyes a little bit.
It forced people to have to do. And it forced us to have to fight for this country.
And your uncle's very brave for doing that.
I couldn't imagine. I'm going to tell you one thing that happened, and I can't remember his name. But there was one black man who was a cook on the ship. Dory Miller. Have you ever heard of Dory Miller?
Dora Miller. Not off the top of my head.
You can look that up in your computer. His name was Dora Miller. And Dora Miller was a cook on one of those ships at Pearl Harbor that the Japanese was shooting under the water.
Okay.
And the white guys was running up, jumping off of the ship, trying to get to the land. But they knew how to swim. Black people didn't know how to swim. They did not know how to swim, and they still, some of them still don't know. But they do try to learn now. I made sure my boy knew how to swim. My brother that ended up in the Navy never learned how to swim.
Really?
But Dora Miller came up out of the basement, and he didn't know how to swim, but he knew those big guns would shoot down planes. Dora Miller shot the first 5 Japanese planes down before the whites started getting on their guns and fighting back.
That's incredible.
But that his name was Dora Miller, and you can find him. I think he's in the computer.
I think I might have found him. I don't know. You know, there's. I'm going to dig it up exactly.
You write his name down, and you look up that name. Dora Miller was a cook. Was the cook on that ship.
Oh, you know what? I found it. I did find it.
You did?
Yeah.
You got it?
If you even want, I could even send you the link or print it out for you and send it to you. But but there's a photograph of him and a whole story about him. That's a whole write-up.
Yes, well, Dora was the one that shot the first plane down.
Wow.
The others was trying to get to the land.
Hmm.
But this boy shot the first Japanese plane down, and I think he ended up before the others started shooting back.
Right.
He shot about 5 planes down.
Did you ever consider working with the, what was it, the ISO? Was that it?
No.
No. I forget what it's called.
When I finished high school. Now, I didn't get a scholarship in San Francisco. I got a scholarship in Little Rock, Arkansas.
Oh, so my little intro is wrong.
Yes.
I'm sorry. I'm going to fix that.
But it was, I got a scholarship for the, and I can't think of the college, but they had another little college. The blacks had to always fight for themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We had to do it for ourselves. So the first one I got was, I can't think of his name, but he was from Little Rock, Arkansas.
And Little Rock, you know, that's a place where a lot of musicians also came up, a lot of Motown musicians. I think Stevie Wonder might have been from there. I'm not 100%.
Right. But that's where I came from, Little Rock, Arkansas.
Something about the place breeds good music.
Yes.
Musicians.
Yes. But when I finished high school, my brother Hayward, who had just come out of the Army, the war was over at that time. And he came to Arkansas and got the two of us, Maddie and myself, and he drove us back to California.
All the way from Little Rock?
All the way from Arkansas.
Yeah. That's a long ride.
Born.
And that's your brother, Maddie?
My sister, Maddie.
Oh, I'm sorry.
From Hope.
Hayward was your brother.
Hayward was my brother, and he was one of the first ones to go into the Army.
Wow. So when he came back, he drove you back to California.
When he came back, he went to California to stay, and he came back and got Maddie and I and took us brought us to California. And, of course, he took us to San Francisco. We lived with our other brother that volunteered. We lived in the house with him. He wasn't married, and he had a big house. Mm-hmm. And we lived with him. But he was let go out of the Army. He didn't go overseas because he had a hole in his heart.
Oh, I see.
And we didn't understand it. Being young people, you don't understand those things. He didn't have a hole when he left, as far as we knew, you see.
Yeah.
So it was just one of those things. They gave him an honorary discharge.
Oh, so he was able to leave.
He left the Army. They put him out. They gave him an honorable discharge because they said he couldn't go overseas, and they were sending my brother Hayward overseas. They says my brother Cott couldn't go because he's got a hole in his heart.
Well, thank God he came home. You know, a lot of people...
He came home and went to San Francisco. They also gave him a letter that any job he got, wherever he got it, he could not be fired.
Oh, interesting. I want one of those. I guess I have to join the Army. Wow.
So he went to San Francisco, and he got a good job. He was at one of these places where the Army send all these big packages. And you get the packages and send them to different places. Well, he worked in it's a warehouse.
Right. Wow.
He got a warehouse job. This one white boy was hired, and he was going to fire Cottrell. And Cottrell said, well, you go ahead and you do that.
And he said, and he'll come back to Sam.
And he wrote this letter firing my brother Cottrell and took it to the manager.
Oh, my God.
Manager told him, "Fool, don't you know you can't fire that boy?"
People are crazy.
They're crazy. But he said, "You can't fire that boy. He works for the government, not just him."
That's so. Having to do with Little House on the Prairie, if I could just ask you, what did you think of the character Hester Sue? Did you have any thoughts? Because she really is a monumental character on Little House on the Prairie.
Thing of it with Little House on the Prairie, I got it from this Roy Campanella story.
Yes.
I had never seen Little House on the Prairie. He told me to be at MGM at 5 o'clock. I didn't know what the part was going to be, but I was a teacher.
Hmm.
He wrote me in as a teacher for the blind school. One of his children had gone blind.
Yeah.
And she had started a blind school. I loved the part.
it's a beloved character in the world of Little House on the Prairie with the rabid fans. You know, when there's also a couple moments where Hester Sue or Keddie Lester really sneaks out and you get to sing a little bit. There's a couple moments with gospel.
On one of the shows, I think it's on two of the shows, they had a church, but you had, there were certain scenes that you did in the studio on the lot. Had Michael had a place that it's out from San Francisco, and it had the scene of a church, had a church, and it had a home and the horses and stuff like that. One day, they asked me if I wanted to bring my church choir on the show.
Really? What?
What difference does it make? Our little choir, it wasn't but about 12 of us, 10 of us. And I brought my brother was in there, my brother Frank, my baby brother. He was in there, in the choir. So we all came, I brought them out, and I sang, and they backed me as they always did.
That's incredible.
Yes, yes. And I think we did that twice. Michael would let me, he said, do you have a choir? Do you have a, you want to sing? I said, you want to bring my choir on the show?
Is that how it works?
It didn't make no difference to me.
Is that how it worked with Michael Landon? He would just say, let's just do it.
Yeah.
Really?
He said, you want to do it? Okay.
It's amazing. I mean, I hear stories about Michael Landon all the time, and people who never met him just love him. And, you know, you, of course, worked so closely with him. Do you have any stories about Michael Landon? Or, I mean, I know that you worked with him in other productions, but...
only two productions I worked with Michael in was with the Roy Campanella. Now, the Roy Campanella show was a very weird situation. I got it in the book when you read that, you'll see. But I played the part of Roy Campanella's mother. But when I went there, Michael and I just hit it off, you know. He was just a good friend. And he was telling me everything. And I told him, you know I'm epileptic, don't you? But
what did he say?
Well, I was epileptic. I became epileptic after I had my son.
Wow.
And I told him, I'm going to tell you something that I never told nobody else, but you don't tell nobody. And I said, this is yours and my secret. I said, I'm epileptic. And we laughed, and he laughed, and he said, don't worry about it, I think I am too. Well, he didn't know what epilepsy was.
Right, he probably thought it was like asthma. So,
yeah. But he said, what should I do if you would? I would have one.
If you had a seizure, yeah.
If I had a seizure, I said, the only thing you can do is lay me down on this couch. I said, I'm going to sleep after that seizure.
Yeah.
I said, let me stay there until I wake up. I said, don't send me to no hospital.
Keddie, did you have a seizure at all during the Little House on the Prairie?
Just like that, I went into one. And I mean, I had grand mal seizures.
Wow.
But he held me until I got through with that seizure. Then he laid me down on the couch. And I said, if you ask me my name and I can tell you, I'm ready to go. If I can't tell you, I said, let me lay down and sleep a little bit more.
Mm.
Well, it was just like that. He did just like I told him. I had one, went into one just like that. He just held me until I finished, and then he laid me down on the couch because you're naturally going to sleep.
Yeah. Well, thank God you're here to tell the tale. You know, it's that can be, sometimes it can be fatal, but
yes, sometimes it can be fatal. But I was very, very lucky.
Yeah,
he told me I came to, and when I first came to, I was stumbling. He said, "She's not ready." She said, "Lay her down," and he had somebody put something over me, and I slept for about an hour. Wow. He did other things. He was going to do mine. We were getting ready to do my things. But he said, we're going to do some other things, and then when she wake up, we'll do her thing. When I woke up the second time, he asked me my name. I said, oh, Michael, shit, you know I know.
Get away from me. Wow, thank God, though.
But he did go over my lines with me just to make sure.
Well, you got to bring it to the table, right?
you got to bring it to the table. Then I love the way Michael directed, because he let you do the scene the way you wanted to do it.
Mm-hmm.
If I got to a line and I wanted to walk somewhere else and stop and look around, I could do that.
Yeah.
And he would just put a piece of paper, because he was going to have them bring that camera to me when I walked there.
There was one episode. I was going to ask you, there was one episode.
The way he directed.
I'm sorry. There was one episode where you were in the same episode as Ray Bolger, the from The Wizard of Oz, the Scarecrow.
Uh-huh.
And he's playing the organ in this kind of funky jazz type of thing, and you bust out into this gospel singing thing, and everybody just starts, you know, clapping. How did that come about? I'm going to guess it's your idea, but I don't know.
I don't know how I managed to get into that.
It is like a magical little scene if you watch it. It's like, what is going on here?
I just would, if I wanted to, I would just start saying it. Because that was my thing anyway.
Yeah. I mean, that's who you are.
I felt like it. And he said, you want to sing on that, you got, and I just think of a song and start singing.
Wow. Can I also ask, are there any, did you have the opportunity to keep any scripts or any kind of artifacts?
I never did. I kept them for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm old now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, sometimes you leave things behind.
My goodness, yeah. I had too much junk.
It's not junk and to us.
When I had my son and I became epileptic,
yeah.
As you get older, so like I'm 86 years old.
Wow, thank God. That's amazing.
And come August 16th, I'll be 87.
Oh. I'm going to call you for your birthday.
There's a boy. In my script, there's a part of it where I I was invited by this man after Love Letters came out, and I didn't know how long Love Letters was going to last, but Love Letters, they still selling Love Letters. And I don't know nothing about it, but they will send me a little few pennies every now and then. But they never did send me real money for my records. Never did.
Yeah, that's a tough, it's a tough business, especially back then.
That's what I was, hear. Now, when I was working at the Ye Little Club, that was my second year, my third year in Los Angeles. And I was working at the Ye Little Club. I met this Rosemary Clooney.
Legend, yeah.
Yes, all right. She came to the club one. She would come all the time, but one time she asked me, sit down, let me talk to you. And she said, if you ever get a chance to record, don't ever go with RCA Victor.
Really?
She told me that. That was Rosemary Clooney.
And that's, I mean, I guess RCA would be the ones who would pay the least.
RCA Victor was in New York. Do you know where RCA Victor is today? Right down here on with Sony Pictures.
Yeah.
And RCA Victor told me, well, Dorothy took me to New York twice. The first time I went and I auditioned for RCA Victor. I said, I don't want to audition for RCA Victor, but I did.
She auditioned said, as a singer?
This is the biggest one. So I went on and did it because she had taken me there. And I said, I don't want to be with this company. And then they told me after I auditioned for them that I didn't have a recording voice. I said, well, that's just fine as far as I'm concerned. I said, because I don't want to be with RCA Victor. No.
Run for the hills.
And I came on back home.
Wow.
And when I was in San Francisco at the Purple Onion, that's when I met Maya Angelou.
Oh, really?
Maya Angelou. And, you know, women wasn't comedians back in those days. This was back in, again, the 50s.
You know, I got to meet Maya Angelou once. She spoke at one of my graduations, and I got to meet her very briefly.
Well, Maya was my first friend.
Really nice.
Very nice. Yeah. But we got, she at that time was telling me she was from Jamaica. And I thought she was from a foreign country.
Yeah.
And she would sing make up these songs, and she said they were Jamaican songs.
She just made them up?
She just made them up, yeah. But she was a clever old fool. I was so glad to meet somebody from another country.
Sure.
So I said, I'm going to meet this woman. I said, I'm going to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, I just wanted to meet you. It's so nice to meet somebody from another country. And she cracked up and started laughing.
And it's a little bit weird.
Are you making fun of me? And you know, I said, you know, I'm one that you can laugh with me, but don't
don't laugh at me.
Don't laugh at me.
You're a farm girl. So, you'll put your fist up.
She crossed up laughing, and she said, "Do you know where Patmos is?" I said, "Wait a minute." I said, "Patmos what?" She said, "Patmos, Arkansas." I said, "That place don't even have a railroad station."
Wow, you got to meet so many amazing people. You've had such like such a wonderful connection with so many people, and been a part of their lives, and they've been a part of your life.
Right, and I have enjoyed myself to death, you know. But Myra, that she was my first friend in show business, Maya Angelou.
Yeah, I got to meet her in 2010, and
2010.
Yeah, she was very nice.
And I met her when I first started singing, and that was in the 50s, late 50s. I think it was 54, 55, or something like that. And I met Phyllis Diller.
I love Phyllis Diller.
Phyllis
so funny.
Diller's first job, just like it was mine. It was my first job as a professional, and it was her first job as a professional.
Could I ask you a couple questions from people who have questions for you, who knew you were going to be, they knew I was going to speak to you?
Uh-huh.
If I could, Cheyenne Hampton, that's her name, she wanted to know if you wanted to see your character, Hester Sue, get together with the Moses Gunn character, Joe Kagan, on Little House on the Prairie. Did you want to see kind of a relationship flourish for the characters?
I would.
Or is it like, whatever?
Yes, I would love it.
Yeah.
You know, but it's just, I'm so old now. I wouldn't remember it that
yeah,
way.
You know, it might have been one of these things where you're like, yeah, it'd be nice, but whatever.
Well, the thing of it is, by me being as sick, in a sense, as I have been after my marriage and stuff, I became very ill. I take a lot of medication.
Mm-hmm.
And Katharine Hepburn had this, it's not, it's where your head shakes, your hands don't shake, your body don't shake, but it's your head, it's mm-hmm. in your head. Katharine mm-hmm. Hepburn had that disease.
Right.
I had it too.
Well, I'm glad that you're taking care of yourself today, though. And
I'm still fine, and I still drive, but I take a look.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go to Arkansas if they keep it up. They want me to come to Arkansas to put me in the black. It's the black history.
Is it a Black History Museum type thing?
Museum type thing.
That would be a great honor. It's just so, it's a crazy time. It would be such a wonderful honor.
In October, if everything goes well and goes like they say, it would be in October.
Wow.
I will try to go. I don't know if I will be alive or dead or what.
I think you're going to be around. I don't know. I can feel it. I can feel it in my old bones.
So?
Yeah. I think you're around for quite some time, Ketty. Ketty. No, I'm kidding.
All right.
I do want to just mention your book one more time, if I could. It's Ketty Lester, From Arkansas to Grammy-nominated Love Letters to Little House on the Prairie. You can find it on Amazon. And I'll put a link to everything in our little show notes. But, Ketty, I want to thank you so much for taking the time and letting me steal some of your morning today.
Oh, it has been a pleasure of mine.
You're such a wonderful person to talk to, and I believe you're going to see your sister, Ernestine?
I'm going to see Ernestine.
Well, tell Ernestine I said hello, and I hope everyone has nothing but good health and fortune in the future.
Thank you so much, and thank you for calling.